You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
It's Sunday, May 20th, 2012, and this is episode 69 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast with, from alexisguide.net, Alex Heberling.
Hello, hello.
From evilspacecat.com, Marie Terry.
Hello.
Our news editor, Jason Strasberg.
Hello, world.
And I'm Thomas Revor from 910 Comics, that's 910cmx.com. And here's the news. Our top story today, Josh Neufeld, creator, writer, and artist of the webcomic Bahrain, has received the Knight Wallace Fellowship in Journalism. Neufeld, who has previously received an Eisner Award nomination for his webcomic Bahrain, has now received a grant from the University of Michigan for a full academic year of sabbatical studies at the university's campus with twice-weekly seminars and other educational opportunities through the Knight Wallace Fellowship. Neufeld says that his study plan is to extensively research Bahrain's Pearl Revolution, which he did a short piece for Cartoon Movement. I plan on taking courses in the history of the Persian Gulf, Islam, specifically the Sunni-Shia divide, and the language and culture of the region. The ultimate goal is to produce a long-form comics format book on the topic. This is a terrific story. Hearing some of the recognition that people getting for webcomics, especially with something as weighty as the Bahrain webcomic, it harkens back to the comic book Mouse. So let's go ahead and now with this out of the way, let's take a look at the buzz with Marie.
Thanks, Tom. We got three articles in the buzz today. The first one is John Allison. Work on my names here. Allison has created Bad Machinery cartoonist has defined a new sort of comic cookbook. Although this the article, which is from robot6.comicbookresources.com, asks why there is no other webcomic cookbooks or comic cookbooks. That is not obviously entirely true. There is, of course, the What's Cooking webcomics What's Cooking that was done a little while ago. But if you want to check out the rest of the article, it is obviously down in the show notes. For the second item, the coming to us found by the Daily Cartoonist and coming for us from the New York Times, it seems that the New York Times has discovered Rage Comics. Of course, all the rest of us have known about them for some time. And of course, they have an interesting perspective on them, as you can probably imagine, the New York Comics actually commenting on webcomics like this. They actually even at one point compare it to a Bob Newhart sketch, which is kind of interesting. But hey, whatever they think it's interesting that finally that something like this is being recognized in the New York Times. If you want to see the interesting views they have on Rage Comics, you can check that out in the show notes. If you don't know what a Rage comic is, and you've never seen one, and you've probably been hiding your head in the sand in the internet, it basically is a series of sort of badly drawn faces that are sort of common property that are altered, and then they put in witty catchlines, usually somebody displaying some form of rage at some kind of situation that is, it's just sort of a humorous way of telling a particular story. But some of them are actually pretty hilarious. But you've probably, if you've been on the internet for any more than 5 minutes in the last, like, you know, year, you've probably seen the faces at least a few times. So you'll find out where they're all from. But yeah, go ahead and check it out. It's sort of interesting to read what they see as this phenomenon. They've compare it to like Keyboard Cat or Rick Rolling and other internet memes. I know,
Now Rage Comics can have a legit source for their Wikipedia article.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's true.
It's legit.
Go Rage Comics. None of the rest of us do, but go Rage Comics. All right. So,
yay, Rage Comics.
On to the last article.
We're not bitter. No.
No, not at all. No.
Maybe we should make a Rage Comic about Rage Comics.
Okay.
And our third story.
Our third story, when I stopped laughing so hard, is coming to us, found by Bleeding Cool, and coming from us on the HuffingtonPost.com. It is an article on why we need gay comics. The article is basically talking about how, of course, back in the day, the comic book code would not actually allow gay relationships or gay characters or even innuendo to exist in comic books, because, you know, if you wanted to actually have your comic book in a store, that was not allowed. Of course, we're lucky that now that that doesn't exist. But it talks about how the comics provide a sort of voice of the people who are, you know, gay and lesbian can relate to. And various examples of comics with either openly gay characters or featuring gay situations, or, you know, just a whole bunch of interesting interesting reflections on how it can affect positively people's lives who are looking for material that they can relate to, in terms of, you know, like if you're growing up and you want something that you could, with a person you could relate to, with situations that you could relate to if you happen to be gay. And talking about how that is needed in comics as well to reflect that person as well and give them something to look up to. They talk about a variety of other comics in the article. They talk about Dykes to Watch Out For. They talk about Jesus Loves Lesbians Too. They talk about a comic called So Super Duper. And they talk, you know, they talk about a variety of things, and sort of this person's who's writing this article sort of experience as well with why they wanted to write their story. So if you're interested in checking it out, the link's obviously in the show notes. And that is all that there is today in the buzz. So back to you, Tom.
Thank you, Marie. And let's go ahead and now head over to our business division with Jason. Jason, I'm really interested in your top story for business, mainly because of some of the stories we've covered in the past. But go ahead and leave us off.
All right. So three stories in business right now. First up, okay, a little spoiler warning. If you haven't seen The Avengers, why haven't you?
See it.
So why don't you just sing yourself for the next 30 seconds? Moving on. So from Hero Complex, we have an interview with the creator of the character Thanos, who was featured at the end of the Avengers movie, Jim Starlin. It's a very good interview, speaking about his creation of the character. But as we get to the end, which is the most interesting part for us, we find out that Mr. Stalin did not even find out that his character was going to be in the sequel to the Avengers movie directly. He actually heard from his friends who were cruising spoilers on the forums of the Avengers movie before it was released. And then we find out that Stalin had to pay for his own ticket to get in to see the movie. So it's a good perspective on what happens when you're working for a company that you're just being paid for character creation, and then, you know, hand over the rights. So, good article to check out. And moving on, we go over to Giga Ohm a little, and it's talking about Facebook. And this gives you a really good breakdown of how Facebook has progressed over the years, how it's become the company that it is now, and also coming up on the public release as they work to become a publicly owned company and make money off of it. So check it out. Next up, coming from Paid Content, we have an article on it begins with Harry Potter and the fact that the Pottermore.com website was holding on to the was holding on to the rights of a lot of the novels going out for ebook trade. Of course, we know that that's been released, and they're working with companies so that they can sell them as well. What the main focus of the article is talking about DRM and how publishers are realizing now that it doesn't work so well, and giving some of the other options for that, like watermarking or password encrypting the files so that you can at least share them, but you can only keep them to a certain number of friends, also limiting the number of downloads or putting it into a PDF. So as we're progressing, we're seeing that that's falling on the wayside for DRM, and really the way that the book is read is going to be changing even more over the next 5 years. Finally, we come up to an article from the Daily Mail. It seems that another person has been charged, this one in, looks like, Sweden. Another person has been charged for carrying Japanese manga, and the charges for child pornography. Of course, he has gone back and tried to have this ruling changed, but of course that isn't going to happen. So right now there isn't just another person who is fighting against holding on to these files, which were on their hard drive. They were actually a translator for some of these Magna cartoons, and they are being charged with holding child pornography. So kind of sad news. That's it for business, and I'll throw it back to you, Tom.
Thank you, Jason, for all four of those three stories. And now let's go ahead and head over to Alex for a look at education. What do we have in the education news, Alex?
Our first item is about how to open your tabs on a schedule. This comes to us on lifehacker.com via Comics Talk. And it talks about a couple different ways you can open your tabs on a schedule. The first one is an extension for Chrome, which is called Daily Links, where you can create your custom, you know, your bookmarks and whatnot. And you can checkmark which days you want them to open on. So you can have, you know, all of your webcomics that update on Monday will automatically open in tabs for you on Monday, and so on and so forth. The next one is called Morning Coffee, and it's for Firefox. And that's another, basically the same thing. You can put your bookmarks into the folders for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, etc., and it'll open up your tabs for you so you can read everything at once. And then it doesn't list a Safari extension or whatnot, but this third method will work for pretty much any browser. You can use your built-in bookmarks to create a specific folder for Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, etc., and just put a bookmark in each folder for the site on the days that you want it to load, and you right-click the folder and click Open All in Tabs, and it will do that for you. And next up on graphics.com, it's an article about the digital branding of websites, specifically stressing the sort of emotionally intelligent website. It goes into a lot of detail on what exactly that means, but first up, there's a pretty handy list of the concepts like location, design, communication, promotion, functionality, and whatnot, the attributes of each one, and what emotional response you should be considering when you design and implement all of those things. So it's definitely a good sort of rundown for people who might need to fix up their website and consider these things. And that's it for education.
Thank you very much, Alex. Living down here in Texas, I've had to deal with some people trying to do digital branding, and they just don't have the concept as they set their computers on fire. But let's go ahead and take a quick break after that lame joke, and we'll be right back with more news and hopefully better humor right after this.
Do you enjoy digitally composed and or remixed music? Love a variety of musical styles? Look no further than LapFoxTracks.com. Over a dozen different composers with individual stylings.
I'll let you my boy in this file sphere. I can hear everything with my super ears. Only feel the way that I'm progressing. Most of the time, that's not to give a damn.
Well, affordable, high-quality musical tracks with much more bass than what is technically possible for this podcast promo. check out LapFoxTracks.com.
Welcome back to the Webcomic Newscast. Let's go ahead and head over to our tech division with me. Our top story in our technical division is Comcast DataCap, an opening salvo. Apparently, they're increasing their broadband cap, their unlimited broadband, which was limited, is now being up to 300 gigabytes per month as it trials two new ways to deal with managing traffic. It said on Sunday. It's a welcome move for those who have hit the existing 250 gigabytes cap, but it neglects to address some of the earlier complaints that have arisen about Comcast exempting some of its own video on demand traffic. But it still is going kind of a rounded run with the net neutrality, where, of course, net neutrality is, you know, open standards, have everything free, get as much as you want type of stuff. They are planning on having an extra tier beyond the 300 gigabytes for other customers, depending if you want to pay more. But it is being seen as relaxing some of the standards, which some of the rules which Comcast is having, and possibly leading to greater increases. Our next story is talking about how mobile networks are policing the web, coming to us from our friends at GigaOM. Titled "How Mobile Networks Are Policing the Web Badly," it talks about a report this week from the Open Rights Group and the London School of Economics that many local mobile operators are using aggressive but haphazard child protection filters by default, leaving adult customers unable to see perfectly ordinary websites instead of preventing kids from accessing adult material. Heaven knows that the kids can get all the adult material they want on the internet. As the report says, quote, "There are serious consequences to badly implemented default child protection blocking systems. They include restrictions on markets, censorship, a failure to address young people's diverse needs, and a false sense of security for parents." One thing it does not mention is a better way of doing some of this. Hopefully, instead of just saying, no, don't do this, they will come up with a better way of working around that. And finally, over on Boing Boing, that's boingboing.net. Just love saying that website, Boing Boing. Kind of reminds me of Gerald. A webcomic talking about India's net censorship law. For those who don't know, India has passed the Information Technologies Act of 2011, a pro-censorship, pro-surveillance internet regulation. And this comic, which is featured over at boingboing.net, gives a good response as to the people's opinions as to this censorship law. So again, that's over at boingboing.net. And now let's go ahead and head over to Marie. We'll boing boing over to Marie for her tidbits.
Well, that sounds nasty. all right. We have three items in the tidbits today. The first one, it comes to us from comicsbeat.com, and it is an article called "Who Believes in You?" Regarding actually Jim Henson. And it talks about, obviously, how Jim Henson died in 1990, but also reflects on much of the stuff, so some of the things that he did, obviously, with Sesame Street, The Muppet Show, and also reflects on some of the, well, a specific song from during the second season of The Muppet Show, a song that was sung by Kermit's nephew and a guest, Burnett Peters, and basically reflects on the how it is hard to believe in yourself when you believe that you're worthless or less than perfect, as the article says, and basically a young person who is awkward and uncertain, but you're smart enough to question the world and your part in it. And, you know, it's easy to believe what other people are saying about you as opposed to believing in yourself. And, you know, even though you might know that, you know, there's probably something better out there, it's hard sometimes to move beyond that thing. Basically, that how Jim Henson, you know, often doubted himself, and when he did achieve success, how to inspire others and basically support people, creatives, other, you know, other people around you. So, you know, do what you love and that sort of thing. It's all very feel good. The whole article obviously is linked in the show notes. And if you want to read something that's very feel good from Jim Henson, go ahead and read that article. It's very much that way. The second one is kind of amusing as well, which comes to us from the outhousers.com. Speaking of dirty. no, just kidding. Apparently, the Daredevil readers were treated to an interesting little tease when artist Mike Alfred wrote to the letters page of the series and apparently joked about drawing an upcoming issue of Daredevil. And apparently the editor Steve Wagner pounced on it. As the article says, quote, like a panther leaps on a fatted calf. And apparently decided they actually ended up setting up something for him to actually draw. So he will. He will only draw one episode or one issue. But he will draw apparently as much of the starting cast as possible. There's some cover work on the article, so you may want to check it out and see where that's going, especially if you're a Daredevil fan. The last article that we have from theatlantic.com is a sampling of 100 ideas as that changed film. So it's a very interesting historical thing. You look at all the great cinematography stuff is awesome. Talking about basically that a new book documents movies' most important innovations. So all interesting things like the kinetoscope, the handheld camera, genres like slapstick and poetic realism and queer cinema, to systems like star systems, film schools, censorship, cultural phenomenon, television, all sorts of, it goes through a huge list and details them, talking about various ideas like serials and expressionism and musical scores, B-movies. Like, it's really awesome. It's obviously too long to get into everything, but it is an amazing look at stuff, especially if you're interested in film at all and how things, it's just very interesting and a lot of great pictures. So check it out. The link is in the show notes. And back over to you, Tom.
Thank you. I heard that there were over half a million letters just for the lens flare itself, but they asked J.J. Abrams to stop writing them.
Maybe lowballing that number.
And now let's go ahead and we've got a couple of people in the news, so let's take a look at that with Alex.
First up, over on geeknews.mtv.com, the best-selling RPG Pathfinder is coming to comics for the first time. The writer of Skull Kickers, Jim Zubkovich, and artist Andrew Huerta, along with Dynamite Entertainment, are making a comic series about the best-selling fantasy tabletop RPG Pathfinder, which will be, the first issue will feature 40 pages of new story and comes with an exclusive playable tactical map and poster.
Ooh.
And, yeah. And next up, over on Robot 6 on CBR, Christine Larson is debuting a collection of short stories. It appears to be a collection of all the short stories that she has had featured in anthologies over the years. So that is pretty awesome. She's best known for the online comic Valentine, which she created with Alex DeCampi. And she's also worked for Ape Entertainment's Shrek and Kung Fu Panda series. And that is it for people.
So she's had both the good and the bad.
Yes.
Kung Fu Panda, a masterpiece of writing.
Hey, that actually got a lot of critical acclaim in China. I'm not kidding, actually.
I don't know how to react to that.
It looks like we've got a bunch of pony news, so let's go ahead and head over to our oddities with Jason.
Yay!
Thank you, Tom. A story check 3, right? Anyways, okay, starting out through the Great Geek Syndicate and on JodyMoisen.com, we have a lot of fun here. Someone went and did comic book versions of different characters in My Little Pony form. So a lot of eye candy here. So you go see if you want to see a Spider-Man My Little Pony or perhaps maybe...
Are you crazy?
Yes. Tom, stop it. We know you're excited. Or maybe a Doctor Who one. So it's actually, they took a lot of time. A Wonder Woman one. It's just a lot of fun to page through here. And, the I Love Lucy one. So yeah, okay, I'm getting distracted. It's a lot of fun. Go check it out. So moving on to the second bit of My Little Pony news. This is actually a lot of fun too. So, coming from the Cartoon Brew, we get a, they actually, wanted to tell us that, talking about in response to the My Little Pony craze, it looks like the hub wants to have the same kind of result with the reboot of the Care Bears. Hoping that maybe they'll, instead of, bronies, we would have belly bros or maybe care dudes. Now, I personally prefer care dudes, but that's just me. Take a look at it, and you can kind of get an idea of what they're shooting for. But the best thing was that once Cartoon Brew had written that article, the Hub had responded that they're not really encouraging that, and saying that maybe their communications and publicity department got a little out of hand. I don't think they admit to doing it, but in either case, keep an eye out for that. And if you're a big fan of the Care Bears and you want to see the reboot, it's coming. Finally, over at
Comics
Alone.
And it is CG.
it's always CG. If there were a live action one, I might go see it.
As opposed to drawn animation, I'm saying.
Yeah. I want to see people in suits shooting rays out of their stomachs and it not being alien.
They call that Teletubbies.
Oh, yes. God, I blocked that out. Anyways, at Comics Alliance, another little fun thing. It seems that Tamara Jones of Baker in the Basement has gone and made cookie versions of several famous web comics. I think this is for TCAF. So you have McPedro from names are escaping me now. Girls with Slingshots, thank you. And, of course, Dinosaur Comics, we have a dinosaur. And this is a lot of fun things. But looking at this, I'm really just getting hungry. So check that out. A lot of fun. And that's really it for the end of the oddities. Back to you, Tom.
Thank you much. And we'll have more on the Care Dudes and Belly Bro story as things progress.
Sure we will.
And we're going to take our second break now. We'll be right back with our discussion portion of the program right after this.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at WebcomicZ. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We're also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the episode 69 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast, and it's time for our discussion panel. Joining me is, from alexisguide.net, Alex Heberling.
Hello, hello.
From evilspacecat.com, Marie Terry.
Hello.
And, of course, I'm your host, Thomas Revoir from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. Our top story is the Hub hoping that men will start calling themselves belly bros and care dudes. Yes, I brought this up because there was so much about the story that didn't get covered. What it was allegedly this was released by a PR flack that did not have authorization from the Hub. There was a letter that went out to a number of different sites from Crystal Williams, manager communications and publicity of the Hub. And it said, "Last night I came across your story on Cartoon Brew titled, 'The Hub hopes men will start calling themselves belly bros and care dudes.' In response, I wanted to let you know that this was an unapproved and unsanctioned pitch by our PR department that we are completely taken aback by. Both the Hub TV network nor American Greetings properties had any knowledge of the pitch angle. It is not our intention to compare Care Bears to My Little Pony and or the Brony community. That's right, you don't mess with the Bronies.
No, you do not mess with Bronies.
Besides, Care Bears are totally lame and ponies are awesome.
Well, and I make a little bit of fun of it. I mean, I'm a Brony myself, so I get to make fun of the Brony community at times. But one of the other stories that came out that we really didn't cover because it isn't comic or webcomic news is there's a documentary that's going to be made about one of the Brony conventions, BronyCon up in New York, that's being made by John DeLancey. That's right, the actor who's done so much, but most notably Q from Star Trek The Next Generation, and also did the voice of Discord in the season 2 openers for My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. He was
basically a very Q-like character.
Absolutely. And yes. He was so taken aback by the Brony fandom that he's actually becoming a Brony himself. He is really involved in the fandom. He even, at Calgary Expo a few weeks ago up in Canada, they had a Star Trek reunion of all the Next Gen cast, including John DeLancey. And while the Next Gen panel was going on, he snuck out and crashed Tara Strong's My Little Pony panel.
Oh, that sounds like something he would do. It's kind of awesome. I saw some actual footage of that. Like, they were talking about it quite a bit on the Canadian networks, and notably on Space. They were talking about it, and it was very interesting, just sort of... they had a couple of clips of him talking about when he first was involved in Star Trek, actually, about, I think it was Gene Roddenberry basically saying to him, like, you know, you have no idea what you're getting into. And he turned that around to basically, like, the My Little Pony was very much the same way. It's like, you don't know what you're getting into.
Yeah, like he said, like, someone should have warned me about My Little Pony.
Yes.
Well, and this weekend over at the Daleks Comic Con, he had a panel with Patrick Stewart, and somebody asked, they asked him, he was mentioning the different roles that he did, and someone chimed up, Discord! And he started talking about the Brony fandom and how he wasn't prepared for the Star Trek stuff, but Star Trek fandom had been going on since the 60s, and Next Gen came out in the 80s. And what a phenomenon it was. And here he is, and he sees the same thing going on. He's getting on the ground floor of an all-new fandom that could rival the Star Trek fandom. And, you know, well, I mean, I agree. There is so much, if the Hub doesn't screw it up, you know, kill it off at 3 seasons, there's a lot that can be done with this. So, more power to the people in the Brony community. And as for, what do they call them? You know, belly bros or care dudes.
That doesn't even make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
Thank you, Rarity. Next topic that we want to talk about is the story that we said, talked about. Facebook doesn't want world domination. It needs it. It's with the recent IPO, the initial public offering of Facebook, there was a lot of hype around this story. And they were expecting instant millionaires and billionaires from the offering of the Facebook stock. And as we saw, that didn't happen. In fact, the Facebook stock started to plummet. And at the end, it was propped back up by some investors to where at the close of the stock exchange, there was really no change from when it opened. And that generally doesn't happen with an IPO, especially when it's hyped as this. So I think that the Facebook world domination, especially with other stories like one of the Facebook creators dropping his American citizenship to avoid taxes, there's a lot of hype around Facebook, and I think that a lot of it is, for those who remember the dot-com bubble bursting, we may be seeing the same thing again. Facebook is definitely a red flag towards that.
I don't know, where was it? Somewhere, I can't remember where I heard it, but I heard something about, it was another news story about basically if people thought Facebook would be around in 10 years. And there was actually kind of a sentiment that a lot of people didn't think it was going to be around in 10 years. They thought there would be something that would replace it. So I don't know.
I mean, social media, the different types of what's hot and what's not. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Dig was the hot thing, and now Dig is they're looking for buyers again. It changes so much that to where Facebook, it probably will not be around in 10 years, to where Google may not be the search powerhouse that it is nowadays. And I mean, they're expanding out their services as well. So, I mean, it's not just the one note. It's so random. I mean, the days of Golden Gopher and news groups are long past. We don't know what's going to be happening next with a lot of this stuff. So,
yeah, and they're not even, like, I'm looking at the article right now, and I was looking at the infographic at the bottom where they're gaining users and talking about, like, they're not number one social media in a lot of places in the world. You know, there's a lot of other competitors. Like, they're not top dog in China, South Korea, Japan, Vietnam, or Russia.
Absolutely.
But so it's...
So, yeah, it's... definitely take anything about Facebook with a grain of salt. I mean, with the movie that came out about it, the Social Network, and some of the drama that's gone on with, you know, who really created it and people being cheated out of the ownership. Yeah, a lot of Sturm und Drang.
I never actually saw Social Network.
I never watched it either, but I do know that there was a mixed review of it.
Yeah.
But I have seen this Pirates of Silicon Valley twice, so...
Yar.
Much more interesting.
Yar.
Well, they're pirates.
Silicon pirates, matey.
Arr. Shiver me, silicon timbers.
They need to do talk like a pirate day.
Which is arr. Well, I would
do one episode where we talk like a pirate.
As long as we don't do one where we talk like the Swedish chef.
October 19th.
There you go. Go
Pirate Day.
Mark it on the calendar, folks. Yes, we will be doing an all-pirate episode. Arr.
See, is that a Sunday this year?
Does it matter?
I don't think it matters. We can just do our Talk Like a Pirate episode.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Oh, Talk Like a Pirate Day is on a Friday this year.
We'll just have to record on that Friday. Arr. Okay, and now to something a little more serious. The Swedish man who has been fighting the heavy fine for possession of child pornography, which was really a collection of Japanese manga cartoons. Now, let me go ahead and say, first of all, this was in Sweden, not the U.S., not the U.K., not Canada. So, I mean, the laws there are going to be different. But this is one of those things that people have argued about over in the U.S., where the point that it was ruled by one of the district courts, I believe. I'd need to check on that. I'm not a legal scholar. But where it was determined that because it is artwork, it's a victimless crime, there was no child involved, so depictions of it that have been drawn cannot be considered the same as photographs where someone is actually being harmed in that. Apparently in Sweden, that is different. And, well, let me go, because you were talking about this a little bit earlier, Marie. I'm going to go ahead and bounce it off to you. You're the one who actually said it's a victimless crime.
Well, yeah. There's no actual victim who's being harmed in the drawing. You know, like there's drawings. There are no actual victims, and there's no one actually being hurt per se in the material in question. I know there's a lot of sensitivity around it, and I know people get really, you know, especially parents get really, 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 really protective about their kids and about, you know, oh God, you know, but it's like, it's
as
also
well
like,
as victims of child.
Yeah. Mostly. And victims of child, you know, like, and I'm not belittling that in any sense, but you know, if it is photographs, it's very different than if it's drawings out of somebody's head, because they're also too, you know, it is material from another country. I mean, it's Japanese manga, and, you know, okay, yeah, sure, there's some perverted stuff in manga, that's for sure, but it's not like anybody's actual kid got hurt, so do you need to consider it with the same sort of, you know, situation? It might have also been one or two pages in an entire novel. I don't know, as an artist, I find it a little bit concerning that even like if there was a comic book that dealt with something, you know, I know this is hentai and stuff probably, just from the get, you know, the thing of it, but it's like, even if you had, it could get to the point where even if you were talking about, you know, depicting a story where you're talking about that as a subject, you know, if you depict it or suggest that in any way, then suddenly, you know, as an artist, you know, an artistic interpretation, you can be arrested for it. You know, I don't like the way that it's going as far as censorship of a medium goes. Like, I mean, obviously in photography, somebody's getting hurt. You know, there's somebody who is definitely being subjected to something that is not cool. But in a drawing, like nobody's getting, there's no victim. There is no one actually being hurt by somebody drawing something in their head. So it seems like it's a bit of overkill to have the same penalties associated with something that was drawn and there was no actual victim to somebody who actually hurt somebody. It just seems, I don't know, it seems a bit heavy-handed to me because it is, you know, you know, if somebody was regarded as a criminal because they looked at some drawings.
Now, in this article, let me go ahead and quote from the gentleman in question. His name is Simon Lundstrom, 39. He says that he was considering moving to Japan if the Swedish Supreme Court does not overturn the sentence. I would feel completely finished with Sweden. It feels so incredibly strange that I should be regarded as a criminal for having looked at some imaginary drawings. But in response, chief prosecutor in the case, Hedvig Trost, said children should never be depicted in a sexual context, regardless of whether it is in a photograph or a drawing.
Again, I think that's that opinion. It's like you've got somebody who's very hardline about everything, and it, you know, it's very hardline, and people really get behind the hardline because it's especially like the parents who are like, you know, they should ever be depicted that way. And it's like, well, that's not very realistic in the sense that, you know, there's still reasons it could happen, you know, because it's going to happen. It's part of human history. You know, if we're going to continue to say, yes, it's bad, there has to be reasons why it's bad. You know, I don't know how to explain it. I'm not for child pornography, and I don't want anybody to put that in the head or anything like that. I'm just saying that I don't know if it is, you know, really worth ruining somebody's life because they saw some pictures or they had some pictures that was part of their job.
Yeah, but it does go back to, I mean, it is...
Yeah,
the whole psychological aspect of it is something that's way past what I would even try to debate upon. I don't know what sort of I don't want to say involvement, what sort of reaction that a child could have to some of this. Most of it would just be, you know, what is this? I don't know what it is. Some of it may go a completely different way to where they think it's completely reasonable to do some of this stuff. I don't know.
Well, I mean, we also haven't seen the material in question. Like, it's not giving us a view of it. I mean, it could be teenage, like teenagers. It could be a very stylistic way of, like, when they draw them, they could be younger than they appear. I know that there was a whole hubbub about Australia having a law that girls or women without breasts over a C cup couldn't be on covers of magazines because it was child porn. So I think there are levels that, you know, like if you're a 30-year-old woman who has A cup breasts, you should still be allowed to be on the cover of a magazine. You know, you are an adult. It just happens that you have small boobs. But, you know, we don't know what, in fact, this material is or, you know, what it was depicting exactly. But, you know, we're debating on speculation and they're labeling it as child pornography and everybody's like, oh my God. But, you know, we don't actually know the circumstances of what is going on aside from the fact he's been charged.
Well, not just charged, but convicted.
Well, convicted. He's been convicted of this. So he's been charged and convicted of this. We don't actually know what the material in question looked like.
Now,
or what the ages depicted were. Because, I mean, still technically anything under 18 could be considered child pornography.
Exactly. And let me go ahead and say, I mean, I speak for all of us, including the staff behind the scenes, that child pornography is disgusting. Doesn't even begin to describe it. taking of the innocence of a child like this just because of your own pervient desires. There are reasons that laws are set up for stuff like this. Now, the extent to which the laws
I do agree with the prosecutor on that. I do not think children should ever be depicted sexualized like that, regardless of what the medium is. But, I mean, there are so many facets to this, like free speech, you know, greater contributions to rape culture and all sorts of things that are so intense and intricate that I just don't feel qualified to start. I don't even know where to begin on a debate like
this. Absolutely. And, I mean, as we talked about before the break, during the break, those who have been victimized in this way, that type of stuff is more than a, I don't want to say reminder, but a
trigger is what the word you're looking for.
A trigger.
It's a trigger.
Is a trigger for a resurgence of all the memories and all the pain that they've gone through with that. There's no difference between anything like this and it. Well, there's a reason it's called statutory rape here in the U.S. So,
I want to just be really, really clear that I am not supporting it in any way, or I am not, you know, saying that I'm only, you know, I'm not sure what did it actually say in the article what his actual sentence was.
Basically, that it was a fine. It was a huge fine. He is not doing jail time.
Okay. Well, I mean, a huge fine. Yeah, okay. For the drawings, like, I mean, obviously jail time should definitely be required for if it was photographs. But you know, obviously this is going to have a huge effect on his you know, on his life now. So,
well,
you know, everywhere he goes.
Let's hope that, well, who knows if Japan will take him in now that he's convicted of a crime like this.
Yeah, I have no idea.
That tends to put a kink in the visa process.
Let's see, you're coming over here because you like looking at pictures of little children having sex. And you've been convicted of it. Sorry, rejected. But it's your artwork! but it's your conviction.
Yeah, well, you know, they're a very interesting culture, the Japanese.
But let's go ahead and go on to our next story.
On to happier news.
Yeah, well, I don't know about happier. Because we're going to talk about Jim Starlin, and we had the story about the Avengers spoiler special where his creation, Thanos, has been revealed to be the big bad behind the travails of the Avengers in the blockbuster movie.
Spoiler alert.
Well, if you're listening to this, you already know.
It's true. Just saying.
Very true.
And it's one of the things that we've talked about, you know, in previous casts, so I don't want to spend too much time on it, but it really is, it's the same thing as Jack Kirby, as Joe Simon, as so many others, you know, in the Siegel and Schuster case, to where, especially the old time, and I hate to use that phrase, the old time, the silver and golden age creators really have gotten rooked in the long run.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it just seems like every time, like, they're talking about, even like, Stan Lee himself was talking about his rights in an article I read. I don't know if it was here or if it was somewhere else, but, basically it's like, he created all these characters, all these iconic characters, and, like, really, he doesn't own the rights to them. It doesn't. And, you know, he would be a much more wealthy individual if he did, and he doesn't. So it's very interesting. It's all these creators that, you know, created all these iconic characters, and some of them, like, have even lost the right to say that they created them. Like, what?
Yeah, that was something that's been fought back for. I mean, when I saw Captain America created by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby in the credits, but I mean, this is a far cry from what they do over the DC movies, to where, I mean, it says, you know, Batman created by Bob Kane, Superman created by Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster, etc., where it's a more prominent thing. It kind of gets buried over the Marvel movies. Now, they had asked Starlin what his opinion is, how he feels about the success of, I mean, Thanos, his creation, being included in the Marvel movie. And let me go ahead and read this quote off from him. He says, it's very mixed. It's nice to see my work recognized as being worth something beyond the printed page, and it was very cool seeing Thanos up on the big screen. Joss Whedon and his crew did an excellent job on the Avengers movie, and I look forward to the sequel for obvious reasons. But this is the second film that had something I created for Marvel in it, the Infinity Gauntlet and Thor being the other. In both films, I had to pay for my own ticket to see them. Financial compensation to the creators of these characters doesn't appear to be part of the equation. Hopefully, Thanos' walk-on in the Avengers will give a boost to a number of my own properties that are in various stages of development for film, Dreadstar, Breed, and the novel Thinning the Predators. I mean, if your character is in there, I mean, come on. The least Marvel can do is pay for a plane ticket and fly him out to the premiere.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like, you know, like the least you could do. But, you know, I don't know. These people, they often just suck. they don't seem to take that into consideration. It's just, I don't know. It's something, you know, I've noticed about it is that a lot of the creators just, you know, once the money starts to be part of the equation, they get the shaft, really. And then they run off and they ruin everything that the person did.
Well, I mean, I'm always reminded of a story that I was told, and I apologize if I get it wrong or if I've read it before, said it before, but it was back in the 70s to where things were going very badly for Jerry Siegel. And he actually had taken a job as a delivery boy. And one of the deliveries he made was to DC Comics.
Oh, really?
To where one of the editors there recognized, I mean, he's walking in and they've got Superman plastered on the walls bigger than life, and along with all the other DC characters, and he's making this delivery, and one of the editors recognized him, shoved him off to the side, signed for the package, gave him a huge tip, and said, "Don't come back."
Ouch.
Yeah, ouch indeed.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can imagine, bad enough that you're sitting there doing a job like this, and you walk into where you see your creation making all this money, but I mean, just for that extra twist of the knife. Now, granted, Starlin isn't getting this. We've had stories about some people who have been having problems like this. And, of course, the Neil Adams interview where he's fighting for the rights of creators. But it's just, it's so sad to see stuff like this happening. Especially when, I mean, the huge, huge amount of money that's being made for the Avengers. And for the creators of said characters to just, you know, having to buy their own ticket.
Yeah, well, it seems like a kick in the teeth, really. You know, like, there's just no respect being paid to the people who did these things. I don't know, I think it, you know, the big businesses are not going to change. They're not going to suddenly wake up and start giving money away. That's just not how they work. I think it really turns to the fans to kind of, you know, vote with their dollars and put their money where the, you know, where they want it to go. And rather than necessarily supporting, you know, the material, you know, or buying direct from creators and stuff as much as they can, or, you know, seeing them and thanking them in person and doing, you know, basically showing the love, you know, from a fan standpoint. And that's like the best thing I think that we can do at this point, especially because of the way the legal system is, you know.
And definitely support the independent creations. I mean, because Starlin mentioned his creations of Dreadstar and Breed, and which both are excellent comics, especially if you like the galaxy-spanning cosmic views that Starlin has brought to characters such as Thanos or Captain Marvel or his run on Green Lantern. So, I mean, definitely, whether it be Starlin or so many others, read the independent stuff, the smaller press stuff, too. There's a lot of good work out there that people are missing.
There is.
But let's go ahead and go to our last object of discussion, because we're running short on time. And that is, put your rage into a cartoon and exit laughing.
Oh, God.
Yeah. To me,
New York Times.
Oh, New York Times.
Of the whole decade and a half history of comics on the internet, this is the thing you chose to give notability to.
And to me, I mean, it's almost an insult, because yeah. I know that all three of us here have worked on our craft. Me as a writer, I mean, y'all as artists and writers, and we're trying to be taken seriously as comic creators that have to be on the web. And since nobody's mentioned it, I mean, things like Thrillbent and some of the others, where we're fighting for legitimacy as recognition for our creations. We have something like this notability for Rage Comics that, I'm sorry, my 3-year-old nephew draws better than this, and my 5-year-old nephew writes better than this.
Well, I mean, too, it's like basically clip art. It's sequential clip art is what it is. It's like people are taking clip art of like a set of essentially like badly drawn faces and using them to make an internet meme. Like that's all it is an internet meme. And there's like a billion of them on the internet. It's like suddenly what people at the New York Times woke up, read a few Rage comics and went, oh my God, this is awesome. Yeah. Like what?
And granted, some of them are funny, but I mean, also some of them are hit by a train funny or broken leg funny. And
yeah,
most
they
of
are
them aren't even
very
that.
Accessible. Oh yeah.
It's, this paragraph here that they've got it, that was mentioned in that way, Rage comics are not like the average viral YouTube video. They are more like a Bob Newhart sketch. The laughs come not from replaying the public foolishness of some stranger, but from watching the awkward reaction of the observer, who almost always appears as a character in the strip. Like Gary Trudeau's Doonesbury strips, there is usually a punchline after the punchline in which the author reacts to the situation. But where Doonesbury characters typically react with wisecracking aplomb, Rage characters respond with, well, rage. Yeah. There is so much work that goes into what we do as webcomic creators. I mean, whether it be the writing, the plotting, the storytelling, the characterization, whether it be the drawing, the sketching, the inking, the coloring. And like I said, I mean, part of it, you want a Rage comic. How about the rage that we should feel because of this crap? And I mean, I can't even think of any other word, well, any other usable word, to make this stuff for somebody who, I mean, is it a release for some of the rage and some of the negative feelings that people have? Yeah. And I'm sure that there are a lot of people out there who can empathize with it, but is this really something that's New York Times? Well, considering the quality of the New York Times recently, maybe it is New York Times worthy. Now, does some of this sound like sour grapes because our stuff isn't getting recognized? Well, there is some that's getting recognized. I mean, whether it be from, as I said, Thrillbent was getting out, is still getting a lot of coverage. Phil Folio, the way he took Girl Genius, and Girl Genius has exploded on the web, and so many others. I mean, the news that Keenspot had, the news that Drunk Duck gets, but at least that was, I mean, I'm beginning to sound like some of the print medium comic creators. Oh, these people aren't legitimate, but I can finally see some of the point of view from the old time of the print media creators versus web comics, because they didn't feel that we put our time in, and then us versus Rage comics, because they definitely aren't putting time into this.
I don't know. It's almost one of those things where you're kind of sitting there going like, really? And you almost don't, you know, you don't have anything more to say. It's almost so flabbergasting that you're just sort of sitting there like, I got nothing.
Webcomics getting the shaft for some other internet meme must be Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think that's what it boils down to.
Must be Sunday. Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, it's like the internet meme is getting profile and real legitimate comics that are great even by people who are fairly, you know, well known or, oh man.
Well, and they even spend, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4.5 paragraphs about ragemaker.net. That's right. You can go and make your own Rage comic over at this, where it's one of several browser-based Rage comic editing and publishing tools.
If cutting and pasting in Microsoft Paint is too hard,
I have more respect for people who are going off and trying to make comics in Microsoft Paint.
Canvas Paint Adventures is huge.
Yeah.
Or Dinosaur Comics. I mean, clip art stuff. But I mean, these are people who are putting some thought into it. That they're it's the same four panels every strip. But I mean, there's some thought in there. There's some creativity going into there. A Rage comic is just top of the head BS. But yeah, that's right. You too can be a webcomic creator by making your own Rage comic, and you too can be mentioned by the New York Times. And on that note, someone who I'll...
Bitterness.
Yes.
Rage.
People who, due to their level of quality, will never be mentioned by the New York Times, and that's Alex Eberling, over from alexesguy.net.
Ah!
From evilspacecat.com, Marie Terry.
Meow.
I want to also thank Jason Strasberg, our news editor, for reading through on the news earlier. And of course, that leaves me. I'm the mad Thomas Revor. And here's where I start doing a pirate voice again. From 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com, where you can see a lot of quality comics with people who actually have learned how to draw and write and many other things too. We'll see you all in the funny papers. Hello, everybody listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. We've got a little bit of an addition we wanted to add in. On the story about the Swedish gentleman who has been convicted and is trying to get overturned his 32 of 51 convictions on child pornography for owning some Japanese manga that he was translating. We had Marie Terry from evilspacecat.com, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
One of our regulars who took the freedom aspect, and although I agree with it, we were talking about after the podcast that there was some additional information that needed to be said. Marie wanted to go through and say a few more things, so go ahead, Marie.
Yeah, I just wanted to be super clear that I don't support child pornography in any aspect, and one of the things that, though, in this particular context. And it actually is stated in the article, and I didn't actually get a chance to point this out, is that it's kind of doubtful that this particular type of conviction is actually helpful to the people who are really abuse victims, to the people who actually really need help and really need to get the monsters off the streets, because it's tying up the courts and tying up things that could be used to actually help real victims. Now, I wanted to make really clear too that I'm from Canada, and Canada has some of the more strict child pornography laws, like literally possession of any kind of material depicting sexual acts under the age of 18 is punishable. And Canadians have actually persecuted people for possession of fictional material, both written and drawn. Before. So it's not like, I don't come from a place that doesn't have very strict laws on this sort of thing. But I kind of agree with the fellow on this article who is the head of the Swedish police child pornography task force. Now, don't ask me to say his name. Bjorn Sellstrom, I think. But he actually mentions the same concern that it diverts police resources, basically, and court resources from persecuting people where there is in fact real victims. And I was just actually reading in the paper here in Vancouver about the really big problem of child trafficking and sexual abuse. And I mean, I would really rather see people focusing on that crime and actually putting away the people who are responsible for prostituting out these girls and recruiting from like elementary schools and really seeing them than necessarily tying up important resources with fictional accounts or pictures or written material as considered illegal in Canada. So even fictional written material, and there have been convictions on it, but it is, I think it's just really, really important that we focus more on the real victims, and when there's real victims and there's real, real dangers and real predators that really need to be dealt with. And that's sort of why, and obviously not blowing it so out of proportion that we can't have a conversation about things like freedom and where the lines should be drawn and stuff. Like, one thing strikes me a little bit strange is that in Canada, the law actually states that the age of consent for sexual activity is 16, but anything below 18 is considered child pornography. So technically, even if two people who are legally able to consent send naked pictures to each other, they could be charged with child pornography, even though they're teenagers. It's, and they're legally able to have sex. So it's, there's some weirdness going, in there. It's a bit odd, but I want to see the real monsters get taken care of rather than worrying so much about the fictional ones. That's all sort of like, I guess it's a priority thing in my head. And I don't know. I know I don't agree with any of the depictions. I don't agree with any of, you know, like, it should not be depicted, but, you know, it also is one of those things where it's like, where do you spend your resources? I would rather spend them on helping the people who really, really need help.
Right. And to reiterate some of the stuff in the article that we had, this gentleman is not going to jail. He's gotten a fine on these 32 cases. I mean, it's money. So, I mean, if people feel that he's been wrong, they can contribute to a fund. I'm sure they have something like that. And it at least here in the States, it would be a First Amendment right, and there would be a fight for it. The laws are definitely different over in Sweden. And as you heard Marie say, I mean, the laws are different over in Canada, which is our neighbor to the north. So I mean, there is no – I'm not going to say that there is no right or wrong, because was he wrong? Yes, the laws exist there in Sweden. He broke said laws. If they don't like the laws, like we do here in the States, like they do in Canada, like they do in a lot of countries, change the laws.
Yeah.
So, was he in the wrong? Yes. Do people feel that he was in the wrong is a different matter. But
yeah, I'm definitely. I just feel more that, like, yeah, definitely he was wrong and he was convicted, and you know that's just the way it goes, and that's fine. He paid a fine. That's actually apparently fairly typical for especially like first offenses and things like that where you're paying a fine. But he, you know, he's still tying up court resources and all that stuff. And even the head investigator for the police force warned that, you know, like it does set a bit of a precedence for diverting police from the actual task of protecting children. So, you know, there's some doubt about the benefits of it. And that was sort of like, you know, where I'm kind of was more coming from.
I know that you were worried that people might thought you were either playing a devil's advocate, which you're not, or B, that you were saying that this stuff was okay, which you're not as well.
I'm not.
You were advocating on behalf of freedom to, you know, for things like this, as opposed to the freedom to do things like this. If this was a guy who was doing, you know, photographing children or worse, string them up, in my opinion.
Oh, for sure.
But this was not. This was a freedom of the press, freedom of print type thing that you were.
He wasn't even. He was. He was not the source of the material either. Like he was translating it from another source. So somebody obviously gave him this material, and I'd actually only rather see them go after those people. You know, get it completely gone. You know, is like follow that up the line. Yes, he was fined, which is great. You know, maybe that'll put some more money towards helping people who need it. But you know, don't. You know, that's not going to be the end of it unless you follow it all up the way up to trail.
Absolutely. So thank you, Marie, for coming back and clearing some of that stuff up. I know that it was something that you were worried about.
Yeah.
And this is no easy topic on either side or for any side. If you're a freedom person or if you're someone who believes that this guy, just by having this material, should be fined or sent to jail or whatever sort of punishment they advocate. We're not the ones to say this is what's to be done any more than anybody else in the street is. We were reporting this and giving a few of our opinions on it. So thank you for clearing that up.
Yep. And thank you for letting me clear that up.
No problem. And for everyone else, we'll be back at our regular podcast next week. Make sure to listen in. And like always, we'll see you in the funny papers.